Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and this is week 15 of the leadership journey for 2019, and it's going to be our final week. And joining me, as he always does, the co-host of this series, BK, Brian Kite. BK, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and I can tell you it's been really fun again this season, just going through and talking about all the different things that affect team culture and leadership.
Yeah, hey Keith, and hope you had a Thanksgiving as well. Great Thanksgiving. Ours was fantastic. I had the whole family actually into our house, so we hosted a big old house full of family and kids running around, and it was that good kind of loud, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, this has been a really fun season again. I think this has been our best one yet, and I hope that the listeners and the audience agrees and has enjoyed going on this journey as well. And you know, the season is not done yet for so many people, you know, and yet we've covered a whole lot of ground here in this conversation between you and I.
Absolutely. And to wrap things up today, you and I do not have a pregame plan here, but we're going to talk about things we've observed from the season, maybe lessons learned, observations about just the different things, whether that's some of our own experiences or things we've seen that have happened with other programs. And, you know, like we talk about all the time, I mean, that's the beauty of the season is you see all these different kinds of things. Just as you see trends develop with an offense or a defense, you start to see those same kinds of things develop in team cultures and leadership and where there's strengths, where there's breakdowns, and, you know, opportunities really to learn from it all.
Yeah, there really is. You know, the deeper I get into this work, Keith, the deeper I get into the sport of football in particular, but it goes beyond that. The more every season is one where I really think the most important skill for improvement is observation. It's, can you observe? Can you watch? I mean, you can have all the courage in the world. You can have all the intelligence in the world. You can have all the processing power and new gadgets, and you can have all of that stuff. But if you're not observing and paying attention, and not observing and paying attention to the right things, you end up putting a lot of energy into stuff that doesn't make that big of a difference, or you miss the key piece. So, you know, this capacity to observe. I mean, one, I'm blessed that, I mean, I'm really fortunate. I love to observe. I absolutely love to observe and watch and tune in and do so in a way where it's not judgment. It's just to see what's actually happening and then say, okay, why did that happen? What was going on? And is there something I don't understand about that? And where are there opinions that I'm holding that are either misguided or incomplete or sometimes just wrong? And where are there things that I kind of had a loose hold on that, boy, I really think I need to get a stronger hold on that because I actually think that's the way it's working. And I think not enough people are understanding this. Because, you know, I was writing a note to myself this morning, and it's going to be for a coming daily discipline, a daily discipline probably this week. And I was writing a note to myself that, you know, one of the important pieces in life for humans is we've got to recognize, and this is get off football for a second, one of the things we've really got to do a great job of, Keith, is acknowledging and accepting and figuring out what to do about the fact that we are a mixed bag of things that are working and not working. And I'm just talking about myself as a man, right? Like, I am a mixed bag of a bunch of stuff that's working well, a bunch of stuff that's okay, right? Right direction, but far from efficient or discipline or elite for sure. And then I'm a mixed bag of a bunch of stuff that's just not working that well in a bunch of areas of my life. It's not all working. Not everybody loves conversations with me. I don't do great in every conversation. I'm not courageous in every moment that I need to be. I'm not learning and executing as quickly as I need to be in certain areas. And so this observation moment, and why I'm excited for this, to have this conversation, this observation moment is one where I really try to look at it through a lens of, okay, how can I just pay attention to what's going on in the world around me? Again, stepping away from football for a second, in the world around me, to learn more about myself for sure and the way the world works. And then how can I use this in football to learn more about the way things are working so that I can figure out what am I doing that's working really well? How am I helping coaches in ways that is really helpful? How am I helping coaches where I'm just okay? And then how am I doing things or where am I missing the boat on things that just aren't helping that much, or I'm not helping coaches in areas where they really need that help? And so I just think, you know, taking a moment back to just observe. Don't judge. Right? Don't critique. Just observe and say, what are we seeing? What's actually happening? And then what does that tell us about the world that we're living in, the world we're leading in, and the world that we're coaching in?
BK, I think Yogi Berra said it best, that you can observe a lot by watching.
Certainly, Yogi always said it the best, right? He always said the best.
And I think you're right, BK. You know, we've talked about so much here on this podcast, and as you were talking here, and I'm thinking about, you know, some recent conversations we've had here on this podcast. And, you know, last week we talked about, you know, figuring out what your beliefs are. And, you know, I think the observation part is so good, but as coaches, too many times, I think we end up failing because we take a cut and paste approach, or a copy and paste approach, I should say, to the way we put things together. And that's really in a lot of areas. You know, it's in our team culture. It could be in our playbooks. You know, it could be how we run practice. And I think what you really have to do when you observe it is get to the heart of the meaning behind all of it, right? So I may go out, for example, and learn how the 49ers run the stretch play and hear them talk about it and get a lot of great information. But at the heart of it, if I did not get deep on those details, ultimately at some point it's going to break, it's going to fail. And what I won't have are the adjustments. What I won't have is the plan to be able to fix it when it's broke. And I just see those breakdowns way too often, that we, you know, things happen that we don't expect, and sometimes people shine through it and they do handle it the right way. And then some other people crumble under it, and it's, you know, it ruins a career. It hurts them professionally. It hurts them personally. And I think that's what's best, though. What in learning your system is exactly that, that it's a system that sequentially helps you understand how to find those answers. And that's kind of been the biggest thing for me as I've looked at this season, was understanding too, like, you know, wow, I really like that. I need to understand more about it. And that's really been in every aspect. That's been on offense, defense. I know I got really excited one point of the season, went back and watched everything Wake Forest was doing and made some determinations of my own was happening, and then reached out to Nick Tabak and said, wow, I love what you guys are doing. I'd love to talk to you about it in the offseason, because the truth of the matter was I didn't know all of the why behind it. I didn't know all the details, which I think, you know, is a huge opportunity for coaches today. When I think about all that we do and the way we can share it today, we do have that opportunity to be able to reach out to somebody, even, you know, digitally, and make those connections and learn, though I don't necessarily think we take advantage of that. I think we're still out there trying to just get more, you know, we're getting a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think we have to look at this. And again, whether it's our offense, our defense, our culture, our leadership, we have to dig deeper, I think, as we head into 2020.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, for the, if you're listening right now, Keith and I didn't put a game plan together. We just kind of got on today to share our observations top of mind. You know, but that was the first one I wanted to share. Really similar to what you were just saying is my first observation that really hit me this year from talking with coaches. You know, I traveled a ton this fall to a lot of coaches and had a lot of conversations a bunch of times during, you know, the bye week with some, you know, head coaches in a bunch of different conferences. And, you know, each time the coaches kind of got a break, there was a theme that hit in most every conversation, just kind of sitting down on the couch. They kind of got that during that bye week, right? That deep breath and kind of just got to share about, hey, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm struggling with right now. And I also observe it a lot on Twitter. I observe it a lot on television. I hear it a lot in press conferences. I hear it from high school coaches. And it's this, you know, my big observation, the first one at least, is the world of football and coaching, it is increasing in complexity and in rate of change in a way that I think the generation who's coaching right now, and I mean the generations, right, the you know, the coaches, what, you know, people coaching in football right now are what, between people who have significant responsibility on a football staff are usually between the ages right now of about what, 27 and 60, right? I mean, so it's about a 30-year window of coaches. But nonetheless, you know, if you look at what's happening with football now and then just go back over the previous 30 years, the amount of change happening within the game and outside of the game that are affecting the game, this speed of change and this amount of complexity is unlike the previous 30 years before it. And what I was struck with this year is, you know, there's really two camps. I mean, there's a camp of coaches who are going to navigate that change and coaches who are going to resent it. And you know, I'm going to stay away today, Keith. I'm going to stay away from any advice. I'm not going to give any advice on this today. I just want to be, I want to really lean into what I said earlier and just observe. No doubt the game itself is changing. No doubt the game is getting increasingly complex. And then no doubt that the things surrounding the game are increasing in complexity and are changing. Parents, communities, money, social media, gambling, stakeholders, the rules, television, no doubt that stuff is shifting and changing. And recruiting for the college game. And my observation right now is if you're not navigating that change and figuring out how to be the best coach for the world you're in, there are consequences for resisting and resenting the environment that you coach in. And I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. It's just, it's come up in every conversation I've had with coaches, Keith, every single one. And the second observation is that there is a really big line between, and this is, you were just talking about, you know, you go a mile wide and an inch deep. I observe a really big line between coaches who are trying to do all the complex stuff and keep pace, quote unquote, and up with and add in everything they're seeing from a complex perspective versus the coaches who have identified the simple things that they compete on and win. And then they bring those simple things to the evolving, changing strategies and environments that they're in. And so the observation is, how do you, as a coach, how do you keep it simple while ushering your team into the actual environment that football's in today, both from a scheme and from a, you know, a, a surrounding world perspective, right? How do you keep it really simple on stuff that has always worked? Well, also, you know, I think, you know, not even to be critical, but we're coming off of Ohio State, Michigan, right? They played and Ohio State obviously thumped Michigan pretty good here over the weekend. And, you know, one of the observations that I have of the Michigan football program is, and I think it's driven from Coach Harbaugh, is that I think there's a struggle since he's come back into the college game out of the NFL. I think there's a struggle to navigate into the current college football world, right? To recruit at the level that college football needs now, to bring scheme into the level the college football world needs now. It's simple, but it doesn't feel like it's the kind of simple for the world that college football needs. And so I think this is the challenge, right? How do you keep it simple? Whereas I think Ohio State on the other side, they keep it simple, but they're doing it at like Alabama is and Clemson is, they're keeping it simple, but on the stuff that's working now. And I think this is what you're seeing from teams that are excelling is they're finding ways and they are working through and they're testing ways to stay simple, but stay simple within the stuff that works now.
Yeah, and you mentioned that last week, and you gave the example of beliefs, and I know you kind of talked in the shift of what Coach Day is doing versus what Coach Meyer did. And I mean, there was still a lot of the simplicity that worked, but for him, I believe the word you used was tough love. And he had to figure out what that belief was and what it meant to him and then apply it. And I mean, they're obviously doing things very well in every aspect of the game right now, including the recruiting portion. And you're just seeing it out on the field, you know, in that regard, thinking about things and observation I had. And, you know, you were bringing up change. I mean, today, as we record this, you know, a lot of people call it Black Monday, is the ultimate day of change in college football. You know, traditionally the day when coaches find out that they're not coming back next year, although some of that even happened on Saturday after the game. So that's moving quicker. I wonder, you know, I'm wondering how much activity there is in the transfer portal today because of it. I think that'd be interesting to see as well, because that's certainly something you need to keep up with in the recruiting world today is the change that's going to come there as well. What I saw this year as a lot of teams who, I guess, had prepared their team well, had prepared their team for adversity, for the changes that might come on the field, within their scheme, whatever it might be. I saw a lot of teams do that very well. And, you know, you could talk about just some of the, I think, outstanding coaching you can attribute that to. Certainly, we don't know everything that they've done on the inside, but when you see the results on game day, you know that they've adjusted pretty well. So, you know, thinking back to, you know, week one of the NFL season, and there was a lot of quarterbacks who were lost. And you look at a couple of the teams that are pulling through that. I thought Sean Payton did an incredible job with the Saints in being able to replace a future Hall of Famer like Drew Brees. Now, Teddy Bridgewater certainly is very capable, but they made that adjustment and they continue to move forward with a different quarterback.
I didn't see, was that this weekend?
Well, Drew Brees came back a couple weeks ago, but you know, in the meantime, you know, when he was lost, I thought, Sean Payton just did a great job of coaching to be able to work the team through that, which for a lot of teams, you know, in the NFL, when you lose your starting quarterback, you hurt for it, right? You hurt on the field.
Oh, tremendous job. Yeah.
You know, I, being a Browns fan, I hate to say this, but I think Mike Tomlin has done an incredible job in losing his future Hall of Famer, in losing one of his best receivers in the offseason, and in losing one of the best backs in the offseason. And then on top of that, having to work through, you know, more injuries, more adversity. And, you know, they're sitting right now on the right side of being able to get into the playoffs. You know, they certainly have had their struggles this year and starting out 0-4, but then coming back and playing very good football. And I mean, just doing it by keeping it simple. You know, another one, again, one I hate to admit because it's our rival here, but Mike Elder, the head football coach in Avon, Ohio, they just made it to the state semifinals. They had lost, I believe, 10 or 11 of their starters over the course of the year, one of those being their quarterback. And, you know, they played us. And you talk about simple wins. I mean, they had a very simple game plan that they executed very well with a lot of missing pieces. They built it around, I felt they built the game plan around their strength, which was their offensive line. And over the course of the game, just stuck with that plan, executed it, and came out on the winning end, made it to the state semifinal again. And, you know, they've just done an incredible job there. And I see it's the leadership, I think, of the head coach within these teams, these organizations, these high schools, whatever it might be. And then the players, I guess, belief in that and understanding here's the plan and we're going to move forward and execute it. But I see all of those. They don't run into those situations and become more complex. They become simpler, and they work on executing what they can do very well.
Right. And you know, again, you see this a lot, right? The misinterpretation, I think, of this, Keith, is simple is better. And so you have that that old school football coach who says, I don't care if they know where we're running it and they put every player in there, we should be able to get 3 yards, right? That's just stupid, right? That's just dumb strategy. And that's not simple. That is, that's just being dumb and stubborn. This is about saying, look, there are simple things that work. Effort, resilience. I heard Paul Chryst this weekend say in preparation for the Big Ten championship game, I respected it and appreciated it a lot. He's prepping for the Big Ten championship, and he was asked, since you lost 38-7 the first time you played Ohio State, what will you do differently? And he said, you know, there's a really fine line when you're competing against a team doing new things for the sake of them being new, if they're not the things that you do really, really well already. And, you know, I think this is the challenge. The challenge is there are things that work, and then it's keeping them simple enough and ensuring that you can execute them well at a simple level, but they still need to work for the environment we're in. And that's the rub, right? The rub is the simple stuff. It has to continue working in this, you know, in this world and environment that we live in today. You know, we've talked about a number of times, I'll use an example. We've talked a number of times about, you know, it used to work, and it did. It used to work for a coach to be a dictator and have command and control and make every decision and be the essentially be the power figure in the program and the community and to be infallible. Like, that used to work in a different environment that we don't live in anymore. So you might call that simple in your mind. It would be simpler if everybody just did what I said, and maybe. But it's irrelevant because we don't live in that world anymore. Like, that doesn't work anymore. And I could debate whether it worked back then, but to an extent, it did work back then. So this is keeping it simple and ensuring that simple still executes and works really, really well. And then the other piece for me, observation, is just change. It's just how much change is going on. And you know, I'm benefited, Keith, of working in so many different industries, but you have to acknowledge the change that's happening, and figure out how you're going to change within it.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the things you're not going to get away from in this game is the change. And I agree with you. It's becoming more and more rapid, the pace at which things change and the things we have to deal with. And, you know, on a different note, just thinking of another thing, I've observed this offseason, and this goes back to a conversation you and I had. I can't remember if we recorded this one. I want to say we did, but we were talking about, actually could have been on a podcast of yours too. I'm not sure, but I heard you talking about the attitude, your approach you take when you're driving. And it's basically to get from point A to point B safely, that you really don't deal in road rage. You really don't deal in, you know, a lot of change happens on the road, right? All of a sudden some idiot cuts you off and, you know, you have an approach that this is how I am going to handle it regardless. And it works for you. And I'm wondering on that approach, if there's, and I think the answer is yes. But just observing, and the one thing that comes to mind is how coaches recently, I think more and more, have become almost adversarial, or there's a lot of conflict when they're dealing with media. And we've seen that over the course of the time. It just seems to be more and more prevalent today that, number one, I do think maybe some of the questions that are being asked, that people maybe don't necessarily have that higher level of respect that they wouldn't ask that question maybe 10 years ago because they knew the coach might get upset. But also the coach coming into it without a plan of how he's going to handle it regardless. Just like you know, I'm going to be driving and at some point an idiot's going to cut me off, and here's how I handle it. My number one objective is safety, get from point A to point B. And I know we talked about, you know, Bill Belichick's approach and not giving energy to that. I saw a great meme over Thanksgiving. It's just a picture of Bill and it said, "Happy Thanksgiving, we're on to Christmas." So, but you know, his approach, that's something that does not take a lot of energy. And, you know, when you think about, I just think going into and maybe having a plan for some of those kinds of things that can be tripwires for you, that can, you know, certainly... At the very least, you could come away looking bad, and at worst, it's something that turns into a controversy and continues on for some time and hurts the focus of your team. But, you know, if it's just better for anything like that, understanding that we will face adversity, when this type of adversity hits me or when I'm going into this situation, here's my objective. I'm going to stay focused on this. Keep it simple, as you like to say, and we'll move forward by kind of taking your approach from getting from point A to point B.
Yeah, and I even start, Keith, before even talking about adversity, I mean, go into E plus R equals O, before adversity, you know, I think that, at least what I do is I have my outcomes set before experiencing anything. Because if I'm trying to reset an objective in the middle of an event, the event is now filtering, especially when you think about my emotional reaction to it, especially if it's intense emotion, anger or you know, love or, you know, fear or any of the really big ones. If I'm waiting to decide what outcome I want in the midst of that emotion, the emotion is going to filter and influence what kind of outcome I'm going after. So I don't wait for the adversity to hit to start thinking about what I'm aimed at. I go into scenarios where the adversity might show up or whatever, it might be indifferent. Driving is, again, the easiest example, but I have the objective beforehand so that this is the ultimate goal. I don't want adversity to push me off of the outcome I was going after in the first place. Isn't that the whole point? The whole point is I don't want to have to reset an outcome in adversity. I want the outcome to be unaffected by the adversity. It's just now the adversity is what I'm dealing with to go after the outcome that I want. So look, if I'm going into a press conference, if you're waiting to decide what outcome or what to say based on the question and reset, well, how do I want to respond to this question for what outcome? It's already too late. Because now you're reacting to the question as opposed to having an aim from the beginning. And this is what you see from Belichick. It's what you don't see from others. Yeah, I think there's some who do it well, but you know, again, Bill's rationale, so at least you understand it, is what outcome that he values is served by his answers to media. And the answer is none. So that's why he doesn't really react to anything, because he already had his outcome set before he ever walked into that room. And there's nothing anybody could say that would put him in a spot where he would react to it, because there is no reaction that serves an outcome that he wants. So he puts nothing into it. Right. Whereas other people are listening to the questions and then are filtering whether it's a question or an insult. And then they're running scenarios in their head about what that person's going to write. And they're already lost. It's already over. So, you know, I'll go back. It's why I, even in my playing days, like, fighting on a field was always silly to me. One, because why would you punch somebody with a helmet on? That never made sense to me. You saw it again this weekend, but it never made sense to me, because what outcome is that I value is served by fighting somebody on a field? What? None. I mean, even if I won the fight, what do I get? Like, is that guy going to respect me now and men bow down to me? Be like, oh, you're the alpha. You're superior to me. No, it's not going to happen. I mean, I'm still 5'9", 180 pounds after it's over. I'm not the alpha, right? Like, not physically. I'd rather win the game. And to win the game, I got to be in the game. I'd rather hit you when you're coming across the middle and actually make you feel it. I don't want to do any of that stuff. So whenever emotions would rise, yeah, we'd chirp, we'd talk, whatever, but those things didn't affect things left or right, one way or the other. Maybe I had to get in your head or whatever, but fighting was just nothing. So it was never a threat, ever, because the outcome was set before I ever got on the field. That never served me, so I was never tempted by the response. You know, and I think you look at other people and you'll see the event happens and then they start deciding the response and what they want and why they want it in the midst of the moment. And that was actually going to be one of my next observations, kind of back from the Browns conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, about the Myles Garrett situation. You know, my observation there is how much in the sport of football hinges on one decision in a split second. You know, the game plays everything. Like, how much of it just hinges on a split second decision, and you know, how often we're training for big stuff when really we need to be training for little stuff and, you know, individual moments, because that's when it really, really, really matters. You know, you all you got to do is get one of them wrong or get one of them right, and your whole season hinges on a split second moment. Like, I look at this, right? Like, how if the Browns don't have that happen, are they possibly, potentially still in it for the playoffs if that doesn't happen?
Probably a better chance, yeah. having that guy out on the field. Yeah,
I think they are. I think I saw their chances of going to the playoffs went to the single digits with the loss to Pittsburgh this weekend.
That's right.
And you know, and then Freddie was wearing a shirt, and then they're talking about that. And blah, blah. I mean, I'm looking at all this different thing. Obviously, you have really good players suspended. So that 4 or 5 second decision, it didn't matter how many good decisions preceded it. That was the one that had to be made right then and there. And so the hundreds, thousands of decisions that they'd made before that didn't carry any weight for that decision right there. That's the margin of error on this. And so I'm just watching how often it's these moment decisions that swing whole seasons. You know, the receiver from Georgia this weekend who got in a fight, suspended at the end of the game, now suspended for the first half of the Georgia or of the SEC championship game against LSU after Georgia's leading receiver was already suspended. Momentary decision.
Ole Miss, right?
Ole Miss. Shoot. It arguably cost that head coach's job, Matt Luke. So, again, just the observation. It's one decision, and making 100 good ones in a row, if that 101st one, you're not ready for it, like, no one's going to give you credit for the 100 you made before. Not in football and not in life.
Well, BK, to wrap up the 2019 season, another great season of the Leadership Journey, season 3 completed here, I will let you wrap it up here with one final observation as we leave this season and move ahead for 2020.
Yeah, one final observation. I was reviewing some old notes from a couple years ago, and I found something I'd written that just said it was around end of 17, start of 18. And I said, over the next 2 years, if you're not all in on culture and creating alignment within your staff and your program, you're going to wake up in 2020 and those 2 years are going to be gone and you're going to wonder what you did with them. And you're going to learn the lesson more painfully than you needed to. And here we are coming up into 2020. And I just wonder where everybody is. Right? I wonder how much longer people are going to not have the conversations they need to have, how long they're going to hold on to old habits, how long they're going to be resistant to feedback and get defensive, how often or how often they're going to, you know, simplify rather than get complex. They're going to make the change that they knew they needed to make, you know, stop resenting the world that they're coaching in. And there's all these different things that we have to do. You know, we're now transitioning from 19 into 20, and we're heading into an off season where the development here over the next 6 months at the staff level is going to be the competitive foundation for all of the growth or lack thereof with the players. And so, you know, I'm really dialed into what's the staff doing to get better. What's the staff doing to improve themselves as individuals, as a team? And you know, my big theme for this entire offseason is going to be staff culture, staff culture, staff culture, staff culture. That's the next step.
BK, I know one great thing that you have put together. I love getting it every morning in my inbox, Monday through Friday at 6. It really gives me a chance very early in my day to just reflect on some things, to reflect about, you know, my role in our team's culture, my role as a leader in the different things I do. And I mean, it certainly applies also to, you know, my role in my family and, you know, basically all aspects of life is the daily discipline. We've been talking about that all season. Coaches, I hope now things have slowed down. If you haven't done it yet, you have the chance to sign up for it right now. It is available for the great price of free. BK, how can they get the daily discipline?
You just put your name and email in at dailydiscipline.com. You can find it on my Twitter feed. You can just go straight to the site, and there's a good chance that a lot of the coaches that you know are already reading it. And if you're not, would love to have you join because it's one of the best things we've got going on right now.
Well, BK, thank you again for another great season of reflecting, giving us some ideas, talking about the things that really can make a difference in our programs, in our own personal lives as well. I appreciate all you do, and hopefully we keep this going in 2020.
Yeah, buddy, looking forward to it, and thanks for another great season.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.